This is Jason Fitzgerald, and you're listening to the Over the Cap podcast, where we talk everything NFL salary cap, contracts, and free agency. And in tonight's episode, we are going to be going over pass rushers that are going to be available in free agency, arguably the best position this year. Even taking into account the franchise tag, there's probably going to be a number of interesting candidates who are going to be out there to be signed. So we're going to talk all about that. We are definitely fully in off-season mode right now. The Super Bowl was last week, probably the most boring Super Bowl I've ever seen. I understand that there have been bigger blowouts, but at least in those lopsided games, one of the teams generally plays very well. This was just kind of dull. I didn't think either team played particularly well. Rams defense played okay. Patriots defense was probably a little bit better, but you know, Goff was so bad for the Rams, it's really hard to even say. He missed it. Cooks basically pitched a tent in the end zone at one point in time, and Goff was so late that the pass got broken up. And it was a good job by McCourty to get over there and break up that pass. He's probably getting a little bit too much credit for that. That wasn't a great play. It was great that he didn't give up on the play, but that should have been an easy touchdown. Cooks also dropped the ball that he should have caught. That was a little bit of a difficult catch, but should have caught that one. But beyond that, I mean, Goff was just throwing the ball in the ground, sailing it over everyone's heads. They had a very weird approach to the way they were playing offense. Seemed like the game was just way too big for them on offense, especially for the quarterback. Defensive game plan was fine. I'd say the Rams defense played well enough to at least cause Brady some issues. I don't think that was necessarily so much Brady playing poorly the way Goff was. And the Patriots defense, I don't want to discredit them. They played okay, but it was just a boring game. You never felt like the Rams were in it. People say, well, you don't like defensive football. I can watch games that are defensive games, and I like them. I actually probably prefer that to a lot of the shootouts where there's no defense at all. But I didn't think that this was a game where there was overwhelming defense. Secondaries played well. Gilmore, I think, had a really good game for New England. But it was not that kind of, I don't know, it just wasn't that kind of game. You weren't watching a quarterback trying to rise to the occasion, just getting beaten down by a pass rush. It wasn't that the Rams had these spectacular receivers that were just constantly being shut down by Gilmore. Like I said, they had the open plays, and those weren't going to be his fault. But I don't know. It was just one of those dull games that's there. It was like sitting through a Jets game, and nobody wants to do that, right? Anyway, we're in the off season now, so everything is all about salary cap numbers and projected contracts and everything else. Just remember, anything and everything that you hear about the salary cap right now is just nothing but pretty much a blind estimate. Nobody knows what the salary cap number is going to be. Right now, we're just estimating it at $190 million. Somebody else might think it's going to be $187. Someone else might think it's going to be $193. So when I talk cap numbers, it's just based on that $190 million. I am counting what will be the official cap carryover numbers from last year in there on teams' adjusted caps. But there are other adjustments that are not finalized that I don't have any idea what they're going to be. The league will probably make them known in another week or two, and the salary cap probably isn't going to be set until the combine, which I guess is about 2 weeks away. So there's definitely some time before that's going to happen. There's also a lot of moves that go on behind the scene. You see a lot of contract restructures. You see players that have earned incentives that we don't know about. It takes a little bit of time to get that information. You'll see players who are obviously cut, and then you'll see players who are signed, and it takes a while. Sometimes when you hear that a player is signed, it doesn't mean that the contract is actually physically signed. A lot of times it just means it's agreed to. Player might be away on vacation. It could be something where, you know, you just can't get that signature in. So it takes time, again, for those numbers sometimes to filter down to us. So people were asking me, for example, about the Bobby Massey contract in Chicago. And it took a while for those numbers to come out. And I didn't even, we didn't even get those. Officially, I think Brad Biggs was the one, and we borrowed from there, in this case. So just so you know, again, it's all estimates, and that's what we take into account. But just to go over those numbers before we get into the free agent pass rushers here, the teams that are going to be the most cap rich right now from the looks of it are going to be the Indianapolis Colts, who are going to have close to $110 million in cap space. They're going to be followed by the New York Jets, who are going to be somewhere around $90-91 million. I've heard other numbers about the Jets where people are talking about $100 million in cap space. You got to also remember that there's what's called a rule of 51, meaning that there's going to be 51 players signed at some point in time. So again, when I talk cap numbers, I talk an effective cap number. The Jets don't have 51 players under contract. Most other teams do. So I'm giving you what it'll be when the Jets hit 51 by signing, you know, a couple minimum salary guys or whatever it may be. Third up, we have the Browns, who are going to be around $80 million. Then the Bills, who will be very similar at numbers. Raiders are going to be around 70, Texans around 65, 49ers at 60, and then we have a pretty big drop to where we get to the Seahawks, Bengals, who are right around 50 million. The Cardinals are at 48, but they just signed Robert Alford to a pretty surprising deal, so I'm going to assume that that's probably going to eat up another 8 million. So they're probably going to be down by 40, which is getting them close to the average number for the start of free agency. On the other end of the spectrum, we have the Eagles, who are anywhere from 14 to 16 million over the cap. They obviously have a very interesting situation coming on with Nick Foles. Nick Foles is going to have his option picked up by the Eagles. I don't know if they've made that official yet. I forget what the timing is for them to be able to do that. They may have made it official. Foles then gets to void his contract by paying the Eagles back $2 million. The question becomes then, do the Eagles apply the franchise or a transition tag on Foles, or do they let him test the market? We've talked about that before. I kind of thought that they would pick up the option. I still kind of think they're going to tag him. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be to tag the trade. I know people are talking about that. The Eagles are still pretty flexible with their cap. I think trading him is an option, but the franchise tag isn't necessarily meant for that, but teams have done that a lot. There's stuff being made now about quote-unquote good faith negotiations. There is a clause in the CBA, I think it's a bit open for interpretation, that basically says when you have a player under tender, you have them under tender with the intent to basically honor that number, number one, and to negotiate in good faith. How can you prove that a team is not negotiating in good faith? I mean, if the Eagles put forth an offer, I forget what Foles made this year, but if the Eagles were to put forth an offer that was representative of what you would pay a backup quarterback or what Nick Foles made last season, whatever that number is, say $14 million per year over 3 years, in my mind, that's negotiating in good faith. Not being willing to honor a tender, to me, is someone that applies a franchise tag on a player, tries to trade him, okay, makes no attempt at all to negotiate a contract during that time, player doesn't sign the tender, and then the team releases him from that tender after really the free agency period. Let's call it April 1st, somewhere around that. I think that's really the only way that you would prove something like that if you filed a grievance. I know we're getting off the pass rusher path here, but I know it's a topic a lot of people are talking about. I just don't see how you could take Foles and say this is a special situation when you go back to John Abraham in 2006, I believe it was, and the Jets applied the tag on him with no intention of making him a 3-4 linebacker in their defense, no intention of having him play for Eric Mangini. The only reason they did it was to trade him, and they traded him to the Atlanta Falcons. A couple years later, the New England Patriots did the same for Matt Cassel. Matt Cassel played for one season with the Patriots, one season where he saw the field. He was on the team before that. Tom Brady gets hurt. He has the 1 year. They win 11 games, I believe it was, but they don't make the playoffs. Tom Brady's going to be healthy the next season. Obviously, Brady is going to be the starter. Well, they franchise tag Cassel. Why? Because they were going to trade him. They traded him the day after, I think, free agency opened. He went along with, I think it was Mike Vrabel to the Kansas City Chiefs, and they made that trade. Brandon Albert was tagged with the point of trading in Kansas City, and they got stuck. They couldn't work out a trade, so they ended up keeping him for a year. Jarvis Landry last year with Miami. Miami had zero intention of wanting him on the team at any kind of long-term level, but they try to protect their rights, and then eventually they worked out a trade to where he could go to the Cleveland Browns. I don't see how this situation is any different whatsoever than any of those situations. So nobody talked about it for them. It's not something that really should be a point of contention for Foles unless the Eagles are doing something just really bad here. And it would be hard to imagine that the Eagles really were, considering the Eagles just paid him $1 million when they didn't need to. So I would say that the sides are on the same page here, and I can't imagine a grievance really being filed over this, regardless of what people are talking about. So anyway, just enough about that, just to get those things out of the way. So what's our beer of the night here? We're doing the Voodoo Ranger IPA. I bought a 6-pack of this, so we're trying this out. Pretty good, pretty fruity kind of beer. Not too bad. So that's going to be our beer for tonight. We'll have one or two of those. Played a little basketball tonight, so we'll see how well I hold up. I'm a bit tired from that. But hopefully I'll make it through this without dragging too much here. So, you know, let's just get right into it with the pass rushers. And pass rushers are a real interesting group of players. Though I do think a lot of times we overestimate what pass rushers are going to get in free agency, get on an extension. If we look at the last couple of years, there have been very few contracts that have really been, you know, those eye-opening kind of deals when we're looking at pass rushers. And people sometimes don't think that because they are paid pretty highly. But if we go back in the last couple of years, what are the biggest deals that were signed? So we had Khalil Mack this year. That's obviously a big one. That's an eye-popping kind of contract. I'd say if you go back a couple of years ago, Von Miller's signing at $19 million was pretty eye-popping. And Vernon at $17 million was pretty eye-popping considering where he was coming from. But beyond that, are there really that many contracts that stand out? I think the answer to that really is no. Chandler Jones, Melvin Ingram, Jason Pierre-Paul, all those guys are franchise players, and they all came in around $16 million or so. Teams have leverage. They use it. And for the most part, they don't let really good pass rushers hit free agency. So if we look at our market breakdown here, let me pull open my file on this. There's a couple of things that stand out to me. Let's just open this. Just give me one second here. I had it and just lost it. Let's see where's our edge rusher market. So if we look at the growth in contract values by annual value, it has not actually kept up with the salary cap over the last 5 years. If we go back to 2014, the growth at the position, if we break them down into tiers, has not held up with the cap growth. It's tried to catch up in a couple positions, but it really hasn't gone there. Contracts that, you know, for your top five players or so, and that they've pulled a comeback there, but again, it's trailing significantly by where the cap growth was. The cap has grown in that period of time by about 43%. The top five pass rushers, contracts by annual value, let's see where they're at here. Where's my top five? I lost my top five. Where did they go? Sorry about that. We've got 6 to 10. All right, let me just work for my base numbers here. So players number 1 through 5, the salary cap or the annual values of those deals have risen 36%. The 6 through 10 contracts have risen 34%. Number 11 through 20 has done the best, 40.3%. And your back-end edge rushers are at 39.6%. The official cap growth is 44.1% over that time. So we shouldn't expect pass rusher contracts to really just blow up because the salary cap is blowing up. There has been it's not like certain other positions like running back or anything, but teams are able to work into decent deals based on where the market used to be. They're doing a good job with them overall. So I know there's a lot of people who seem to be under the impression that, you know, pass rushers are all going to get paid a bazillion dollars, and maybe some of them will. But historically, at least in the last 5 years, that really hasn't been the case. We just haven't seen that happen. So if we break down our pass rushers now into tiers, and let's break these down here. And I always find this to be pretty interesting. And this is why I say we don't see a lot of players who really hit free agency. So if we look at our tier one contracts, our average value on those deals is about $16.3 million a year. If we inflate them, it's $18.7 million a year. That's if they actually grew with the cap, which we know they haven't done. Tier two drops all the way down to $11.7 million with a 13.3 inflated number. Tier three deals are all the way down at $6.5 million a year, 7.2 inflated. And then in our tier fours and five, we're looking at $3 million per year and $1 million per year. So that's our demographic. And when you look at the tier one players, we have six franchise players, two extensions, and only one player signed as an unrestricted free agent. I believe that was Vernon. When we move to tier two, we have just one franchise player, three unrestricteds, and seven extensions. We move to tier three, now we get our unrestricteds. 13 unrestricted free agents, only three extensions, two players that were cut from other teams that signed deals. Only 40% of players that are in tier three, signed tier three contracts, actually remained with their original team. The other tiers are probably closer to about 65%. And that's because you do have players like Mac that were traded. You do occasionally see some trades. Chandler Jones was a trade. So even though he was an extension, he was not signing with his original team. When we go to tier four, 10 unrestricteds, zero extensions, five street players, none are on their original team. Tier five, which is really getting down into your depth chart kind of, players, 12 unrestricteds, two extensions, five street free agents. That's the veteran market. You look at the draft position for these players, there's kind of clear trends. Average draft round is 1.5. So our tier one is basically all first round and second round talent. Tier two, 2.5. Tier three gets close to three. Then we're talking about four. And in our tier five, we're talking about players who were selected basically on an average of about fifth to sixth round. So, you know, you get into these numbers and you start to get a better feel for where players are going to slot in. And I know sometimes people say, well, how come you're not slotting that guy in right at the top when, for example, he may have a grade from Pro Football Focus that says it's so high, or the media maybe is fawning over a certain player. And again, outliers happen. Vernon, I would have never projected to be a tier one deal. Never, never, never. But he got there because of just a crazy scenario. When you get into breaking down the performance by tiers, and you can certainly start to see things that become important. So there's really not a big difference in our play time between our tier one and tier two players, but the amount of production that you see does vary a lot. The pressure numbers are actually not too different. 43 for a tier one and about 40 for a tier two. Hits on a quarterback, 23 to 17 and a half. So again, there is a gap at least there, and it's not major. But then in our sacks, we get into 12.6 to 8.3. And that's a pretty big difference. Tackles for loss, your impact plays, 16.2 versus 11.1. Solo tackles, 40.3 to 33.8. Our assists, 11.5 to 15.5. So the tier two players maybe are getting more assists on plays, but not necessarily making those initial stops. Then when you get to tier three, there's a big change. Our average play time drops to 55%. Sacks drop to 5. That makes sense because they have less time on the field. Just 11 quarterback hits, 24.5 hurries, 7.4 tackles for loss, average of 24 solo tackles and 11.9 assists. Tier four, we're talking about situational guys, 35% play time, about two or three sacks a year, a couple hits, a couple pressures, not really much going on. They're not playing much. They're rotational guys. They're coming in and spelling your tier ones and your tier twos. The tier five, I didn't even bother tracking those. You're talking about players who are very limited play time guys, really aren't going to produce much, might even be more there to be helping out on special teams and some other areas. So when I look at these players, a lot of times I'll look at where they were drafted. I look at how much they play. I look at how many times they get to the quarterback and how many times they bring the quarterback down. How many impact plays might they be making behind the line of scrimmage by themselves? You know, what are they doing in those regards? I think those are kind of your drivers for what's going to happen on these deals. I think that's kind of what teams seem to consistently look at. And that's what they kind of push on. But the question is, how many of these players are actually going to get to free agency? So let's pull out our player list here. And this is, I think, the interesting thing. So the guy that I have on the top of the list is someone that's probably not on the top of a lot of people's list. And that's Jadeveon Clowney. So Clowney is one of those players where the statistics, despite what I talked about just now, probably don't jump off at the page on for you. You know, he was probably at like 9.5 sacks this year. Let me see if I can pull him up. I'll just pull up his PFF numbers here. I won't get into grades. Yeah, they have him at 9 sacks. I think his official number was probably 9.5. He's converted, these are my numbers, about 15.3% of his pressures have been converted into sacks. Hurries per pass rush, just about 6.5. They credit him with 38 stops, which is very high. That's second in the group of free agents. He's pretty high on tackles. So, you know, he's up there in those kind of categories. But he's not necessarily up there in some of the traditional categories. The reason that I have him as high as I do is really two things. One, he plays a lot. I mean, he plays in, what did he play last year? 85, 86, 87% of the snaps? 84.3% of the snaps. That's a huge number. Because, again, where we talk about where you have to spell a guy with a tier four player, for example, that means you have to sign another guy for at least $3 million or so to play a couple snaps for you. So where are you better off? Are you better off paying someone like Clowney, where you can pay him a big number and then you can just get $1 million guy or a lesser rookie to certainly spell him, because you're only looking to replace 10% or so of the snaps, 10 to 15% of the snaps, versus having to pay someone a good salary to come in for that 30% of the time. So that's one of the big reasons. But the main one is really where he was drafted. It's constantly a sell process when you get into free agency, right? You're selling someone. You're selling your skills. You're selling your ability. Well, when you're a number one overall pick who's been to a couple Pro Bowls now and has been productive after having some injury issues, there's not a lot of convincing that you have to do. It means that 31 other teams probably had you graded as one of the top three athletes in that class. They believe you're a superstar, and you've done nothing in your time in the NFL to convince them otherwise. You're not a bust. Maybe you're not a super player, but you do enough things. And they're going to look at a situation like in Houston with maybe the way that they use him and the fact that they have other pass rushers on that team and they're aggressive with some of their calls and say, you know what? He's losing statistics because of the defense, whereas we can bring him in as our best player and we're going to put him out there as our prime guy and he's going to put up numbers like Khalil Mack. That's going to be the thought process that goes into a lot of teams' heads, and it's going to be very easy to convince themselves of it because everyone was convinced of it a couple years ago, and again, nothing negative has happened to change that opinion. I think a great comparable situation, if Clowney was to get to market, is another former Houston Texan, and that's Mario Williams. Mario Williams was a former number one pick, I believe, in the 2006 draft. That was the Reggie Bush year, and you know, there was a lot of questions as to why the Texans took Williams over Reggie Bush. This is before the running back position really started to fall down. Williams was a good player in Houston. He had some really big seasons early on, you know, 14 sacks, 12 sacks. I'm just pulling the things up here. Just take a look at him. He had 9 sacks in 2009, made the Pro Bowl for the second time. 8.5 sacks in 2010, and then he got hurt in 2011, but he had 5 sacks in 5 games. Houston decided to not use the franchise tag on him because I think they looked at this and they saw what might have been declining production in terms of the sack numbers, is some of his tackle numbers. If you look at the things, that some of the numbers started to go down. Maybe they thought he peaked. Maybe they thought he wasn't worth the number one overall pick. So they didn't bother with the franchise tag. They let him hit the market. And he went out off an injury and a 5-sack season, right? And he absolutely broke the bank in free agency. He signed a $16 million a year contract with something like $53 million guaranteed. In 2012, I mean, it was a crazy deal when you go back on that. And it really stood the test of time. I mean, even if you inflate this now for the growth in the cap, you'd be looking at a deal that's about $23.5 million a year and about $78 million in guarantees. Those are gigantic numbers. Those are numbers that would be right at the top of the group right now. And I don't think anyone looks back at Mario Williams and says, well, he was the best pass rusher in the league. He's a really good player. But he had a deal, and it was an outlier contract. The top guys at the time, and I don't remember who they were, but I'm going to say that his deal was probably about $4 million a year more than the next closest player. I mean, it was a pretty big gap. Even when J.J. Watt signed a couple years later, and he surpassed that in annual value, the breakdown of the Mario Williams deal in terms of cash flows was still stronger than the J.J. Watt deal. What year did J.J. Watt sign? J.J. Watt signed a really good contract. The Texans signed a really good contract with Watt, I should say. He signed in 2014, so he signed 2 years later. And, you know, it really took a while because this one was not as strong as the Mario Williams deal. Just the way the cash flows worked out and everything else just was not as strong a contract. So if I'm Clowney, I think I have to use that as some kind of baseline for dealing with the Texans. Even if I'm going to be franchise tagged, then I believe that's what will happen. I don't think he's going to hit the market the way Mario Williams did. But I think he has to use that. Even if he was to hit the market, I think he's capped off because Khalil Mack has similar physical attributes and is a better player. He's been more productive. But I think the numbers won't be that far off. So I have him somewhere 22, 22.5 million a year. I think unless he was just really risk averse and just gave the Texans some kind of discount because of that, I can't imagine why he would, you know, hold off and wait, you know, or why he would accept that kind of deal below that. And it's also possible if he gets tagged, he could decide to wait to let the market play out for some of these other players, because then maybe he could surpass someone like Mac. The second player that I have on my list is DeMarcus Lawrence from the Cowboys. Now, this is a real interesting case because the Cowboys already franchise tagged him once. So they could franchise tag him a second time, and I think they might do that. The tag would cost about $20.6 million, a little bit less than that. So they could do that, but I think that's just going to make him ask for more money. The representation for Lawrence is the same as the representation for Vernon. So very clearly, they're going to be looking for a market-busting kind of contract. And Lawrence is a much more accomplished player. While he didn't have a fast start to his career, neither did Vernon, in the last 2 years, he's got 28 sacks, 142 pressures, 73 tackles. I mean, they're ridiculous numbers. He's first in sacks, first in pressures in the last 2 years among free agents that are available. He's fourth in tackles. You know, and he's gotten a lot of attention. You see, last year, Lawrence, I think some people would have looked at him, myself included, as kind of a one-season wonder. Looking at someone that, you know, a second rounder who's kind of come out of nowhere to have this big season. So it made sense for him to go on the tag. Because he's on the tag, that immediately gets you more attention. Because now, well, you know, they got a franchise player. So you get more notoriety during the season, more eyeballs on you, more media, more talk about that. He happens to be on a good defensive team on the Dallas Cowboys. Number three, it was a playoff team. So a lot of attention comes his way, and I think that's just going to help him even further. The negatives that I have on him is that he's a 70% player. That's not a major negative. So the tier ones and tier twos are very close together at about 75% playtime. So he's right there. But I think in terms of getting him to jump over Clowney, I think that's one of the factors that you have to take into account, is that Lawrence is probably not going to play the same amount of snaps. I think some people may look at Lawrence as a little bit, maybe not cast into a role, but I think they probably see more versatility in Clowney than they do in Lawrence as well. And these are just minor nitpicking things, just trying to explain why I have one over the other. He's just a big-time player at this point. I think the Vernon comparison is definitely apt right here. If you do inflate that number, you're looking at a deal that's probably $20, $21 million a year, and I think that's what he's going to get. Is it going to be with the Cowboys? I don't know. I do think they'll tag him. I do think they can probably come to an agreement. The issue is going to be, if they go to 21 on him, where are you going to have to go with Amari Cooper when you do extend him? How much higher is Amari Cooper going to have to be than the rest of the market? Because you start to set precedents within the organization when you do certain deals, and you set certain expectations with other players. And the pass rusher and receiver markets are close enough together in terms of financials to where I think that could be an issue. To say that, well, you know, they went over that Von Miller deal, and they went a couple million over what would have been like a comparable a couple years ago. So Amari Cooper should be $3 million over, you know, a guy like a Brandon Cooks, to bring him to $19-20 million a year. That's significantly higher than anyone else in the market. So I think Dallas has to consider that as well. And they also have to consider their own budgeting, for the fact that they do have Prescott to extend. They probably will extend Ezekiel Elliott, as well as Cooper. So those are going to be considerations there too. Number three, D Ford for the Chiefs. Ford is another one of those kind of first-round talent guys. Probably looked like a bust early on. First season in the league, he played 11% of his snaps. Didn't hit 44% his second season. I talked about this, I think, in an article I did with Pro Football Focus. If you looked at those numbers would not have gotten him his old bonuses in the old CBA. Those bonuses were considered so easy to earn, they would call them something like a log bonus. It was as easy as falling off a log to earn them. Basically, all you had to do was play 35% time as a rookie, 45% any year thereafter. Typically, all rookies earn them in their first year. Certainly, they earned them by the second year. They were monster payouts, monster escalators over the life of the deal. He wouldn't have gotten them in the first 2 years. That's a bust label right there. But he came back strong, and he was up to 70% play time. And then this past year, he hit, I think, close to 90% play time. I think he's definitely going to be franchise tag. The Chiefs are a team that constantly uses the franchise tag. You go back, they've used it with Dwayne Bowe. They've used it with Brandon Albert. They used it with Justin Houston. They used it with Eric Berry. They constantly use the tag. It makes sense to use it with him. I think there's still question marks about what's Ford's ceiling, what's his floor. I think that's the kind of player, kind of like Lawrence last year, even though there's more to go on with Ford. I think that's a way that they should go. The negative on the franchise tag for them, they've gotten hammered in contracts for the most part when they've used these tags for players. They've signed pretty big deals. Justin Houston was a really good contract, actually, all things considered. But even that, I mean, they had to go to a high number, you know, 16 and change when they signed him. And those numbers haven't been, they haven't had a lot of guys really, really blow past that. You know, and Ford should ask for a lot of money. Why? Because they paid Sammy Watkins freaking $16 million a year. They paid Anthony Hitchens $9 million a year. Ford should be looking for $20 million plus. And I don't know if the Chiefs should give it to him yet. You know, there's just some other things that I think I'd look at here where I'd temper my expectations a little bit. But I think if they were to get a deal done, I think he would probably come in somewhere in the $19 million range. I think that's probably where he would be. I think, again, the comparable on him is probably Melvin Ingram. I think they're very similar in terms of career arcs and everything else, age-wise. You know, Ingram signed for $16 million a year, so... You know, if you inflate that or you grow that for the way that maybe things have grown, maybe you're talking about $18 million. Either way, you know, it's a pretty big deal. And even though they have different guys negotiating, I think you can also use that Justin Houston deal possibly to your advantage. Number four is Frank Clark on the Seahawks. Just a consistent player. Got a lot of attention this year playing in Seattle. He's really helped with the transition, I think, from the secondary being like a big strength of the team to their front guys kind of being a, you know, the important part of the defense. Same issues as Lawrence. You know, he's a 70% playtime guy. You know, he's very productive when he's in there. Hunter for the Vikings, that's going to be your comp player for him. Hunter signed a very, very, very team-friendly deal. So I think you just throw that one out. Seattle has been pretty aggressive with the guys they want to keep. I'm assuming that this is going to end up as a one-year tag. That's my assumption on this one. But they have been pretty aggressive with certain extensions. You know, when you look at the numbers for Sherman and Chancellor and Earl Thomas, for example, when you looked at a lot of those players, you know, they really did go above and beyond. You know, they going way back to Percy Harvin or even trading for Jimmy Graham, though the trade compensation for those players. They're aggressive, but I don't know if they're going to be that aggressive here just because with all the money that could be there and these players asking for 20, I think there's still a lot of hesitancy for certain teams to get up to $20 million a year. I don't think they have to get that high to get a deal done. I think they could probably get a deal done for... I don't know, probably around $17.5 million a year. That would put him right in that kind of Vernon category. I think that's the number that you're looking at for him to get it done. But I don't know. If you look at what he's probably going to ask for at first, I'm not sure if they'll be able to bridge that gap. So I could see a one-year tag on him. Next up is Trey Flowers. That's the guy I get asked the most about. Flowers probably had the best grade of these available players. Maybe he was a little bit lower than Lawrence. Production-wise this year, obviously he was very good. Let's see, 14.1% of his pressures turned into sacks. You know, among players who play a good amount of snaps, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, that's behind D. Ford, Clowney, and that's really it. You know, not a lot of other guys there. In terms of hurries per snap, again, if we look at players who play a lot, he's top of the list. You know, 9.3% of his time, he's getting at least a hurry. You know, his stop numbers are very good this year. Third among free agents. Tackles, very similar. You know, all those things. Flowers is not going to have the athletic ability that jumps off the page at you. You know, he's a lower draft pick. I think he was he fourth round? I think he was. Let's just pull it up. These guys have not, maybe he's a third rounder. Let's see. fourth round. Generally, those players have not been the ones to score gigantic contracts. I think that's something that's going to be a little bit of a negative for him. I think the other issue with him is some of the numbers that teams really look for, which are those sack numbers, don't jump off the page at you. If you look at his regular season numbers the last 3 years, great, consistent player. 7 sacks, 6.5, 7.5. Again, that's not jumping off the page. That's not any different than Vernon, all right? And this could, again, be the very similar outcome. Flowers, in my mind, the comparable, again, is Hunter, much like Clark. I think the issue, though, that you run into here is you may not have as many teams interested if he's available. Now, the thing is, I think of those names I just mentioned, he has the best chance to be available. Why? The Patriots usually don't get into the whole franchise tag process. They look to extend, but they look to extend kind of at their numbers. I think if he was willing to take the Hunter deal, I think they'd probably do it. They may look for something a little less, but I think they would probably do that, you know, that $14.5 million a year kind of contract. The reason some of these numbers scare me in terms of signing someone like this, and I'll use the Jets as an example because the Jets are definitely linked to him through a lot of speculation from people about, you know, raiding the Patriots and getting a player from there and finding a pass rusher because they haven't had one in a billion years. The issue I think that you run into here is when you take a player who's coming from a championship team and he's expected to be another cog in the wheel, you don't really get criticism. Those are the kind of players who you praise because they've outperformed their draft status. They do little things that maybe help you on plays. And it all blends in because your team wins. When you say, we're going to make you the man, this is similar to what happened with Vernon, I think, with the Giants, and you pay them that big amount of money, and if you continue to be a 4 or 5 win team or your defense continues to not play well, well, the general manager is going to get killed for having a guy that he's paying $17 or $18 million a year to that's literally a 7-sack guy. And you say to yourself, well, how didn't you see this coming? You know, when you just look at everything that's there. So I think there's going to be hesitancy because of that. Again, all it takes is one team. And I brought his numbers up a lot just based on his playoff run because he got so much attention and so many more eyes on him that I think that's really going to help in terms of his marketability and being able to sell himself to maybe more than just one or two teams. So I do think that that's a big deal for him. But those, I think, are your big-name guys. You know, and I have him, just to give you an idea, I think he's probably going to be $15, $16 million a year if he does get to the market. And I think he has the best chance to get there. But that's the kind of one where that general manager is kind of putting that noose in the neck if they sign him to that deal. You know, and you got to take risks to win in the NFL. This is a risk. Maybe you got to take it. But I think it's just risky because of the kind of numbers that are going to be put up there. It's going to come under a lot more scrutiny if things aren't necessarily going well. I think those are your best pass rushers available. I think now you're going to drop down and you're going to get into, you know, the next tier of players, which really is going to be getting more into your lower level tier twos or your tier threes. Now, what might the order be on those players? And I think that you get into some interesting discussions that are there. So let's just run through some of these players, and maybe not in any particular order. But I'll give you one that could be interesting and could be a guy that's maybe in that $10 million range, even though he's 31 years old, and that's going to be Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham is one of those players who I think has always been a pretty efficient player. Among free agents this year, he is 5th in hurries per snap production. That's pretty good. You know, he's pretty good in making some impact plays and getting in there. The negative on him is going to be age. I think he's, though he did play a lot this year, I'm not sure how much that'll hold up. But I do think that he has a good chance to probably be in that $10 million category. Where was Michael Bennett a couple years ago when he signed? That's probably what I'd compare it to. Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett was at 9.8, so it would make sense to me that he can get to probably around $10 million or so a year. I think he'll probably be there. I think that's a good opportunity. Ziggy Ansah, that's an oddball one. Ansah is one of those players who there's a lot of negatives. One, he's a lot older than I think people think. You know, he's not as young as some of these other guys. You know, he's do I have his age up here? I don't think I have his age. I should. Where is he? Oh, he's going to be way down because he got hurt a lot this year. He was hurt this year. Yeah, he'll be 30. So I think he's going to be hurt by that. He's been hurt a lot. Very productive when he plays. Bombed out of his franchise tag year because of the injuries. Where does he come in? Does a team take a 3 or 4 year gamble on him at 10 to 11 million a year? I wouldn't be stunned by that. Might he also have to take a short-term deal? I wouldn't be stunned by that either. But he'll probably be in that 10 million-ish range. I think someone will give him a look at that kind of number. Dante Fowler is an interesting player. Again, productive, but I think there's a lot of people that look at deficiencies there. I think there's some worry about what kind of effort you're going to get if he gets a big deal. I don't know if Fowler's going to get a big contract. Things turned around for him when he left the Jaguars and he went to the Rams. He was a much more impactful player, I think, with the Rams than he was with the Jaguars. All along, I've kind of had him at a one-year deal for like $8.5 million. I think that that still may be where he ends up in that $8.5 to $9 million range, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I could see a team getting very bullish on him and going into that 3 or 4 year kind of territory, you know, in that 10, 11 million a year range. I could see that being a possibility, especially if some of these other players aren't going to be on the market. They may look at him, and again, you've got that first round grade and those little things that I think will stand out and may help you in terms of getting a contract. After that, who would I put next? Let's see. Where would I go next with these players? Za'Darius Smith on the Ravens, and the Ravens probably won't re-sign him. He would be another guy I think that you look out for getting into that kind of range. Let's see. He had a good season this year. Again, one of these like out of nowhere kind of players. Is he somebody that could stun? You know, maybe. You know, he had 8.5 sacks this year. Before this, he had basically had maybe 10 in his entire career. He had 10 tackles for loss, 25 quarterback hits. Only started 8 games, and this is one of those where probably someone is going to look at him and say, well, you know, you give him more opportunity, he's going to be more productive. A lot of times that doesn't work out, but he could be one of those players that sneaks in that 3-year deal, moving in into that $9 to $10 million a year range. And I think he's someone that if he, well, he'll definitely get the free agency, or at least have an opportunity to. He could choose to sign an extension. I think he's someone that could stand out that maybe people aren't really thinking of that much as a standout player. You have Preston Smith. I'm not as high on him. I think he kind of flies under the radar. I don't think he's the type of player that's really going to jump out completely. He's not coming off a great season. His numbers did go down. You wanted him to probably build on those 8 sacks. He's probably firmly in that third tier of players in that $7 to $8 million range. Productive player. I could see him, you know, going to one of these teams that's going to play specifically, I guess, a 3-4. That probably makes some sense. We've got, let's see, other free agents here. Who are some other players? Well, we've got the older guys. So your older guys who are going to be available are going to be Terrell Suggs and Clay Matthews. I know I mentioned Brandon Graham before. These guys are much older on the scale. I'm not going to count Marcus Hunt. Who's the other? We've got Brian Arakpo and Cameron. That would be the other guy. If you want to throw guys like Bruce Irvin and Michael Johnson in there, sure, but I don't think that they're going to hit the same kind of production. You know, these guys are going to be interesting because they're somewhat productive. They're name value players. The question is, where do they wind up? You know, Arakpo should get the least of all of them. Wake, good question as to what's going to happen there. You know, are the Dolphins going to make him another offer? Because if the Dolphins make him an offer, he's probably going to play for a season for one year for $8, $9 million. If he goes on the market, my guess is maybe closer to $5 million, $6 million. Terrell Suggs, I can't imagine him playing anywhere else. He'll probably just sign for the same $5 million or so. Clay Matthews, he'll probably go. I'm not sure what he'll earn. You know, he'll wind up with one of these teams that, you know, is interested in veterans, you know, players, teams like the Raiders or something like that, probably at maybe $7 million a season. I think those are the type of players you don't want to be stuck building around. You know, and then you kind of get into your more situational guys. You know, Bruce Irvin at this point in his career is probably like a $4 million player. Derek Morgan, that's another one who's on the little bit of an older end. He's probably in that $6 million range. We've got Marcus Golden. He's an interesting player because he's probably going to take a one-year deal for probably something like $6 million. Golden had that one year where he was terrific. He got hurt. He hasn't recaptured that. This year was an absolute disaster. He needs a fresh start. If I'm him, I'm going to sign a one-year deal, whatever it may be, even if it's lower than $6 million. You take it, you hope for a better situation because you're a player that can earn a lot more money if you get out there. Let's see who else we have. We have Aaron Lynch on the Bears. He's available. How did Lynch do this year? I haven't even really paid much attention to that. This is one of those players that, you know, was hurt a lot. Let's see. You know, he takes 1 year to only played 30% of the snaps. Three sacks, a couple hits, a couple tackles for loss. Yeah, he's probably moved down into the $3 to $4 million range. I don't know if he'll get a six again or six and a half, whatever he signed. Deion Jordan, no. Okay, now the Broncos. The Broncos have two really interesting free agents in Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray. Barrett to me is the better of the two players. He's the more productive. You look at this, he didn't get an opportunity this year because of who the team drafted. You look at his history here, his snaps, he went from 45% as a rookie, 36 to 67 in his third year, and he dropped all the way down to 25 because there was just no spot for him. He's been productive, 5.5 sacks, 4 sacks, he had 3 sacks this year in limited time, a couple of hits, pressures, not bad. I think there are going to be teams that may convince themselves that Barrett is someone that is going to fly under the radar, and they can snag him on a 3-year deal, and they can slot him in to be kind of a secondary pass rusher that has outside potential, you know, to maybe get close to 10 sacks in a given season if it's the right situation and everything else. I think he's someone that could get a lot of incentives in a deal. My assumption, 3 years, I could see anywhere $21 to $23 million. So in that $7 to $7.75 million range, I think it makes sense. I think teams will do it. I think they're just going to chalk this year up to lack of opportunity. They're going to say he's a good guy to get. Now, Ray, he's got that draft status. And he had that 1 year where he really started to do well. And you said, you know what? They're going to have a devastating pass rush with him, with Von Miller and everything else. And then it all just went nowhere. Nothing really translated. High upside, but a low floor. You don't know what you're going to get. While there was not opportunities for him this year, he had played himself pretty much, I think, out of the rotation. There's a reason why they didn't pick up the option on him. So I would guess, much like Aaron Lynch I talked about before, those players, I think he's looking at a one-year deal probably in that 6.5 to 7 million range. I think someone will give him a shot. Someone will say there's a lot more he can do. And at the very least, they'll say, you know what? This guy's going to see that there's big money ahead of him. So we can sign him for 1 year, and he's really going to give it his best effort, and then we'll just walk away. It's a possibility. I can't say it's a certainty that he'd get there, because I think there's got to be a lot of questions on his effort and everything else. But I think they're both very, very interesting free agents that maybe not a lot of people, especially Barrett, are going to be talking about. And I think they could be really interesting ones. It's running down the rest of the list of guys who didn't play much. Shelby, no, that's a nobody. William Hayes is pretty much at the end. Really nobody else here. But there's a lot of players. There's a lot of good veterans, you know, that it probably won't be too expensive if you want to slot a veteran in. There's some terrific young players if they get to market. There's good tier three players who might be tier two talents. You know, who knows? Some of those guys may, in a better situation, different situation, maybe they're going to stand out. So I think this is one of the strongest positions in free agency. I think you've got a couple superstars, even though they're probably all going to get tagged. You got a couple superstars. Then you got a couple of guys who are that next level that have that potential to be somebody. You're going to be taking risks on them. The question is just how much of a financial risk do you want to take? And one of these players is probably going to stand out. And I forgot Alex Okafor is another one. He voided his deal. So he'll be a free agent as well. Probably, again, looking in that, you know, $6 to $7 million range or so on a new deal. I think he was at, is he at four? Let me see where he was. I just forgot about him. I just popped him up. I forgot to filter through to my voids. He was only a 3.5 on his last deal. So I would imagine that he'll probably come in around $6 to $7 million on like a 3-year deal. Good player. I think that's a good player to be available. So if you are in the market for a pass rusher, and pretty much every team is always in the market for pass rushers, there are going to be some good guys available. And then you get into cuts. You know, who are some players who are going to get cut this year? And there's a good number of those. Let's just take a look at guys who are probably going to get cut. Justin Houston is a possibility. He's got a giant cap number. He's still productive, but he makes too much money relative to his production. They'll probably get a deal done that reduces his salary and brings his cap number down, but throw that in there as an outside possibility. Robert Quinn, he's a possibility. If the Dolphins are really tearing things down, I can't imagine that they're going to spend $12.9 million on Quinn this year. He might be available, I don't think, by trade, because I think the number is too high. That's his salary for the year. So I think they'll probably have to cut him, but he'll be available. He might be an intriguing veteran. Vernon, who we talked about before. Vernon is still fine at like a $10 million level. He needs a change of scenery. The Giants need a change of scenery. It's better for both sides to move on. But he's still going to give you good production, $10, $11 million a year. You do worry that he misses a couple games a season, but I think that's a pretty solid player. I don't think Everson Griffin will be released. I know there were some issues there. Vinnie Curry's going to get released. He's a more situational guy. He scored a good deal with the Bucks last year. I was a little surprised by that. I thought he was like a $3 to $5 million player. Jerry Hughes is going to stick around. Cam Jordan obviously sticking around. I'm just going in the order of cap savings. Andre Branch is going to go for Miami. That could be a veteran body you throw on there. Merciless will stay. Addison will stay. Tyrone Crawford will, I guess, stay. Nick Perry will probably stay. I know I get asked a lot about him. Those are probably the main names. Connor Barwin was already released, but there's nothing going there. Those are the names. So, I mean, there's a couple good players who are going to be released too that are probably going to have a market even though they were cut. They can move into those tier threes and in some cases, I think, the tier two range. So it's a good group of players. So I think if you're looking for pass rushers, you should be pretty excited. Now, are you going to be excited if I'm the New York Jets and I come out of this and I end up with Brian Arakpo and Clay Matthews? No, I'm not going to be thrilled about that. But in general, you have a lot of opportunities and there's going to be a lot of fits. Don't be surprised if one or two of these guys that you say, well, maybe they'll get a $5 million deal, ends up signing for like $2 million with the Patriots or something, the way Chris Long did a couple of years ago. Goes to one of these better teams thinking that they can get a ring at the end of their career. Would not be stunned by that at all, at all. But overall, I think you're going to see a lot of money spent on pass rushers this offseason, whether it's extensions or signings in free agency. And I think it's definitely one of the more intriguing positions in free agency. All right, so let's get to your Twitter questions here. Let's pull them up. All right, so I asked on 2 days here. So let's see. All right, so let's go to the first set that I asked yesterday, and we'll read these through. Okay, Joey Bavaro asks, Jets are an obvious need for pass rushers. Who's a real shot that they could sign? They have a lot of cap room, and the Jets have done one or two pretty questionable deals, so they're probably going to spend. I would think from a realistic standpoint, it probably Trey Flowers is the guy. I think if you drop down from that, you'd probably be looking more at someone like a probably Fowler. And then if you don't land Fowler, maybe the next ones up would be someone like a Smith or either of the Smiths, Sedarius or Preston. Maybe those would be the players. I think if Clowney shook loose, I think the Jets would be in the mix for Clowney, even though we're looking at a $20 million plus deal, in my opinion. I think they would be in the mix on him. I think it would make a lot of sense. Pretty versatile. I'm assuming the Jets are going to switch defenses here, but I think he'd fit in fine. I think those are probably the targets that they'll look at. I'd be pretty shocked if they don't come away with kind of one of those names. I hope this is not, Cameron Wake coming at the end of his career because he gets along with Adam Gase. I have no idea if he gets along with Adam Gase or not. But I hope that's not the situation. I hope the Jets are not in a situation either where they are taking that risk on someone like a Golden for a year. They need something a little more certain. I could live with a Barrett and you just give him a shot. If the number is right and you're not saying that he's going to be your primary pass rusher. But I think one of those other guys they should probably come away with. I don't think Ziggy Ansah. I think there's too many questions there. So hopefully that's not one of the guys that they go after. All right, number two. Jack Duffin, Flowers to the Browns. What's it going to cost? $16 million a year, $15 million a year. I don't see that one. I know they have the cap space to do it. I know they have the room. I think they're probably going to look at it and say they've got enough with the pass rush. They need to improve other positions. So I think they'll focus on other positions more so than the rush. This really isn't a pass rusher question, but I'll throw it in there anyway. Hayden Goldberg says, what does KJ Wright get on the open market? Does he re-sign with Seattle? No, I don't think he'll be back with Seattle. I think he'll be too expensive. He's probably going to get in that $9 million range. I'd be stunned if he topped Luke Kuechly. What about placement among all linebackers, including Miller and Mack? No. There's no comparison at all when you get into the middle linebacker, outside, and so whatever you want to call them, your non-pass rushers, there is zero comparison to those guys at all. The market tops out, around $12 million or so. That's your second-tier pass rushers at $12 million. There's no comparison. None of those players are ever going to touch those deals of the pass rushers unless there's just a complete shift in the way the NFL is played. Where can I find the podcast? Well, I'll let you know. James Ash asks, after all the franchise tagging is complete, who will be the most sought after edge rusher to hit free agency? And that's going to be Flowers. And I guess the Jets. I'm going to say he winds up with the Jets. I think this will be one of those situations where the Patriots kind of say, look, get an offer, bring it back to us, and we'll let you know if we can do that or not. Or they're just going to make him an offer and say, look, this is the best we can do. We're willing to go to 13 or whatever number that might be, 14 a year. We're willing to do that, but we're not going to go more than that. You know, take it or leave it. Dog Pound Ireland. What are the most important metrics to take into consideration when paying big contracts to pass rushers? And that's a great question. I think what a teams look at, not necessarily a salary driver, but I think teams really look at those pressure numbers, and I think they look at the play time. I think those are the two things they really look at. I think the pressure, because they know that they're getting production with guys that are give pressure. I think sacks are obviously important, and I think sacks are a much bigger driver than pressures in terms of the final contract value. But I do think the pressures helps them quantify it a lot more. You know, I always remember there was a player years ago on the originally drafted by the Bills, ended up on the Jets. Aaron Maben, I believe, was his name. And he was a bust first round pick. I think he was like number 10 pick or something. And he came to the Jets and he had this real fluky year. I'm going to say he had 6 sacks. And I wouldn't be stunned if he had 6 sacks and 10 pressures. It was an unsustainable level of sack production based on how many times he was getting near the quarterback. What happened? Jets had good coverage a lot of times. He was getting a lot of coverage sacks. He was getting a lot of broken plays where guys literally ran into him. I mean, that was literally seemed to be what was happening. And not surprisingly, when he went to free agency, there was not a big market for him. In fact, there was almost no market. I think he re-signed with the Jets for 1 year at a pretty low number, may have even been a minimum or close to it. So I think the salary drivers to me are probably in no particular order, but I think are more sacks, age of the player, how much he plays, where he was drafted, I think is a big deal, because I think teams look for those athletic freaks, you know, those guys that are like the top 1% of athletes. And those are typically your first round picks. So I think that's something that they look at. Tackles for loss. I think impact, anything that delivers impact, and pressures as well. But I think those other things are the ones that really stand out. And when you look where I did those contract breakdowns of the tier one, tier two, those impact plays is really where that differential is. The sack number is more of a difference. The tackles for loss, where the player was drafted, not that's an impact number, but where the player was drafted, solo tackles. You know, those are the things that I think people look at. Where are they winning one-on-one matchups? And do they have that second gear? Is one of the reasons why you say, well, pressures are important. They are. Is one of the reasons why these guys are sacking quarterbacks more, because maybe they do have that occasional super explosive first step, that big move where they're just knocking somebody down to where they're able to get to that quarterback faster than somebody else, to where they just have just a game wrecking ability or a play wrecking ability every now and then. And it may only be a couple extra times a season that it happens, but you get paid a lot for those couple extra times. So I think that is a terrific question. You had a follow-up, but I think this was for Miguel, and congratulations to Miguel. He's a Patriots cap guy, and you know, they won the Super Bowl, so congratulations to him. I know he was having fun, I think, on the float to while filming. I think he was on the media float, he said, and I know he's putting out a lot of video from that. And he has a question. This is from, I think, from Miguel, but I'll answer it anyway. Will the Patriots pay him? Is he more valuable to the Patriots than other teams? He's talking about Trey Flowers. I don't think the Patriots will pay him, but I do think, well, they might. I shouldn't say that. I think they'll make him that offer that I mentioned. And is he more valuable to the Patriots than other teams? That's what I talked about before. I think, yeah, I think he's probably more valuable to the Patriots than he might be for other teams that are going to slot him in as the quote-unquote savior of the defense. I think that's the case. Nick says, no specific question, but I would like to recommend discussing Barrett and Shane Ray. I think we did that. Neither is expected back in Denver. I'd agree with that. Both could get good deals elsewhere for anyone unable to sign in the top tier. I think that's all pretty accurate. I think Barrett is the guy that gets the longer term. I think Ray is the shorter term. People are probably going to look at Ray as having more upside, even though I think there's a lot more downside there. I think Barrett is probably one of those guys that's going to be consistently, you know, 6 to 8 sacks if he gets the playing time with that outside possibility of double digits. Ray is someone that probably has the athletic ability to do more impressive things, similar to like Fowler. Question is just, can he show it? Miguel also has a question, is who gets tagged? So I think the tags will probably go to the first four guys I mentioned. I think Clowney will get tagged. I would say I'm probably 75-25, I think, on that one. I think DeMarcus Lawrence will probably get tagged. I think I'm right around that same percentage there. I think Dee Ford will get tagged. That's like a 90-10 one to me. I'd be pretty surprised if he was available. Frank Clark is probably more like a 70-30, maybe 65-35%, I think. But again, I'd be pretty sure he gets tagged. And Flowers, I think I put less than 50%. So I'm going to say Flowers will be the one available. I think those other guys will probably all get tagged. All right, let's move on to the second set of questions. All right, let's see. Wow, a lot more in this set. Trey Flowers' next contract. That's from Mike Wong, so we've discussed that one. So, you know, I think it's a 5-year deal, $15 to $16 million a year. Alex Taylor asks, what's the market value of Fowler, Ray, and Preston Smith? Fowler is that interesting one that I talked about. My guess is I'm still going to go with that 1 year, kind of $9 million-ish deal, but I would not be stunned. Let's say all these guys get tagged. Let's say the Flowers gets tagged, or even if he doesn't. And let's say a team like the Jets is involved. And let's say the Jets are left at the altar by Flowers, who goes back to New England. Who do the Jets go to next? And they probably go to Fowler. And at that point, do the Jets go 3 years, $36 million? I wouldn't be shocked. So if I'm betting man, I'm still going to say 1 year, $9 million-ish, $8 million-ish. But I could see one team going crazy. I think Ray will be in that 6 to 7 for a year. And Preston Smith is probably in that $7 to $8 million range on like a 3 year, maybe 4 year deal. Misfit 74 asks, who are some of the edge players who could be traded due to their cap hits? I think there's very few trades that are really out there. Let me just look at my list. Who would be players that would be available in a trade? You know, Justin Houston's salary is too high, so I don't think so. Vernon's salary is probably too high. Quinn, I think, is too high. You know, Everson Griffin, maybe. I don't think they'll move on, but I'm going to say that's a possible. Yeah, Jerry Hughes in Buffalo, you know, he could maybe go, but that's not really cap related. I think that's just turning the roster over. Texans are not getting rid of Merciless. William Golston will get cut. He's no good anyway. McPerry is paid too much. I'm not really seeing anybody else here. I don't think that there are players, you know, unless the Jaguars did something wild. I just don't see players here that are, you know, that it makes sense to do that with. Is there anyone on the other end of the spectrum? No, not really. No, I don't see anybody getting moved. I just don't see those players. I mean, maybe something happens that I'm not thinking of, but just looking at those players, I'm just not really seeing that. Okay, next up. Michael asks, thoughts on Kentavious Street coming back healthy for the 49ers? I have no anything on that whatsoever. I am not familiar enough with the 49ers to even make that kind of call. So that's not anything that's really in my wheelhouse there. What's the next question up here? Daniel Munoz asks, what first round edge would you put opposite Key? I have no idea. I'm not, I have zero clue as to anything draft related, so it's pointless to ask me those questions. I am about as well versed in the NFL draft as Stephen A. Smith is with anything football related these days. Rashad Butler, how likely is the possibility of Trey Flowers ending up in Miami with his ex-defensive play caller? That's an interesting one. You know, if Miami is truly in this blow it up and rebuild process that some are speculating, I don't see it. I don't think that, that'll happen just because of that reason. If they're looking to change the culture around, you don't do that bringing in a player who's going to make $16 million a year. You just kind of fill out your roster with guys and you try and find those young gems more so than getting the second contract guy, because quite frankly, unless they think that they have the way to move up to draft a quarterback this year, or they think that there's going to be a quarterback available, Flowers will probably be on the decline by the time they have a quarterback worth anything. So I don't think this would be a year where you go out and you make a move. They also don't have a lot of cap space. They've had a lot of bad deals in Miami, and it's left their cap in a pretty tough position. And yeah, they're going to make cuts this year and they'll be okay. I'm not saying that they can't sign players, but I don't think that you go through what they're going through to just double down and sign more big contracts. They're just going to take a beating this year, probably the way the Bills did in terms of their cap stuff, and then just look to get out of it next year. Charlie asks, what's the difference in pay scale between pass rushers who line up a defensive end versus outside linebacker? How important are players' relative scheme versus skill? Does the scheme fit change how much a player would get from different teams? That's a good question. I do think scheme fit plays a role, not so much because people are like, well, we're going to put him in our defense and he's going to jump. You know, he's going to be great. You know, other than maybe someone like a Clowney. I don't think that's really the thing. But I think when you are someone that's versatile and you say, you know, well, this guy can definitely put his hand in the ground and he can stand up and he can do this and he can do that. You know, he can drop back into coverage. He can, you know, he can contain on this side. You have more suitors. The more teams that you have looking to pay you, the more money you're going to make. When you have players where you say, well, you know what, they have a defined role. You know, their only role they can play, where you get into the situational pass rusher, for example, that 50% playtime guy, that guy that's in there and passing downs, just can pin the ear back, put his hand in the ground, pin the ear back, kill the quarterback. That's his mission. He can't do anything else. You're more limited in the amount of teams that are going to be looking for you. And because of that, you're going to get hurt. Typically, I think the defensive ends are probably paid a little bit more, though that may have shifted now. You know, there's so much change that's come through there. I'm just looking through these. Let me open up the 3-4 outside linebackers. It definitely used to be your defensive ends were the ones who were making more. Yeah, but you do have Von Miller and Justin Houston in there. You know, if you look at it right now, probably your highest end guys are your outside linebacker types. But then your next group, your next probably like 10 guys are coming from a 4-3 end kind of position before you drop back to the outside linebackers. My guess is there are certain outside linebackers who are just kind of athletic marvels. So you know, they're really getting a very high grade from a team, whereas the other players at that position are probably a little bit more interchangeable, whereas the defensive ends probably all stand out in some way. So that's probably the reason, I would think, for that. Max asks, chances that Darius is back in Baltimore and what's his expected price tag? So, like I said, I think he'll be in that $8 million-ish range. You know, maybe a good example would be like a what's that guy's name? Paul Kruger, that left from there, that was kind of like a part-timer pseudo starter. The Browns paid him thinking he'd be a great starter and wasn't. There might be a lot of similarities to that. I don't remember what they paid Kruger years ago, $7 million a year. I don't know. That's probably the similar kind of thing. I don't think he'll be back in Baltimore. I think Baltimore is pretty tight with their cap. And I feel like Baltimore typically makes those moves to keep guys ahead of time rather than let things play out to get to that free agency point. You know, unless you're going to tag a guy, which I can't imagine they're going to do here. So I think he will go the way of, no, excuse me, probably some other pretty good defenders that have left there, maybe for cap reasons, maybe for other kind of planning reasons. And I know they have a different, you know, they've made that transition to the general manager, but I would think it's a pretty seamless transition. I mean, this is all guys who've been around forever. So I wouldn't think that it's changing the way they do business. Bambino News. Who is the closest to Vernon Golston in this class? Again, I know nothing about the draft, but if there is a Vernon Golston in this class, the workout warrior, please, Jets, do not draft him. Damien asks, I don't know if he's a pure pass rusher, but are the Vikings going to let Anthony Barr walk after investing such a high draft pick? Well, he's definitely not a pass rusher. He's not even remotely a pass rusher. You know, are there teams who may say that, you know, he can kind of rush the passer more? Sure. You know, maybe the way the Browns looked at someone like a Jamie Collins. Yeah, it's possible. But no one's going to look at him as when Von Miller was kind of playing in that role. He's not going to be that kind of player. The Vikings will probably move on. The Vikings have spent a lot of money on their defense. Barr has been down the last year or two. He's going to be looking for a lot of money. I don't think they can sink any more money into that defense, or probably just in the team in general. Yeah, they have some money. They could probably pay another corner. They have a lot of money invested up front. I think you just let them walk. It's not a tough position to replace, and you can find players who are cheaper that can play there. Per asks, is the transition tag an option for Lawrence given the Cowboys cap space? No, there'd be no reason to transition tag. I mean, it would be the same rule that would apply to the raise. It'd be the 120% raise. So it's the same number. So they're not going to transition tag him. They'd franchise tag him. Darn Zion asks, does Frank Clark hit free agency? If so, what kind of contract is he looking at? I don't think he will. He's probably looking at a deal in the $17 million range. I talked about 17, maybe to 18. Could be asking for a lot more than that. If he has a real big season, he'd probably get a lot more. I don't think he'll hit free agency, though. I think he'll get tagged, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if he plays the season on the tag. The most under-the-radar pass rusher in the free agency or draft that could turn out to be a steal? Muhammad asks that. Well, I know nothing about the draft, so who knows? In terms of players that I think could, you know, won't cost a lot, that maybe could give you better production, and this is in no order. This is just in the order I have a listing of here. I'm just going to go down. I think Preston Smith could be someone that maybe grows a little more. Smith from the Ravens that we talked about, I think he's someone that might fly a little bit under the radar that can give you something. I would say the most likely name to fly under the radar that probably has potential to be a starter for a couple years and give you some production is probably Barrett from the Broncos. I think he's the guy that probably has that chance to, you know, play 60% of the snaps as a decent starter. I think he might be the guy, and he's definitely going to be someone that nobody pays any attention to because he didn't play much this year. So I think that would really be the name that jumps out to me the most. Next question. Jahi asks, how do the Dallas Cowboys keep Tank Lawrence? Pay him a lot of money. They have cap space. I think people, because it's the Cowboys, don't realize that the Cowboys have a pretty low-cost roster overall. Even though they do have some high-priced players on their offensive line, and the expectation is they're certainly going to have a lot of high-priced veterans soon, with Cooper and Prescott and Elliott and all those guys hitting free agency. But they have that ability to keep Lawrence as well. It's just a question of where they want to go with him. You know, if they just want to do it for a year, franchise tag him. You know, and it's as simple as that. He really doesn't have any other options if they do that. Asks DeMarcus Lawrence, injury issues and all, worth re-signing even at top dollar? If he hits free agency, he's going to definitely get, you know, $21 million a year. Teams are going to go crazy for him in free agency. So I don't think anyone's worried about anything. CSX asks, what's the podcast feed? I guess I'll try and answer that tomorrow when I get a chance. ARS, with a possible work stoppage in 2021, do you foresee a lot of front-loaded deals with guaranteed money to pass rushers? No. I think teams... Okay, a couple things on that. Teams are going to look to put money, if they can, 2021 and 2022. Why? Because you want to put players in a position where they say, man, I might be giving up a lot of money by sitting out. You don't want to pay them to have money in a quote-unquote war chest to sit on for a year and not come back to work. I know it doesn't sound good, but that's what you want to do, is you want to push as much money as you can into that, probably that first year after the CBA expires, and in a sense, try and starve the player out. You're trying to lessen their will by doing that. So I think that's more of the situation that'll happen. Now, you will see certain things in contract language for players that are going to get like roster bonuses and stuff that are going to make sure that those roster bonuses are protected by tying them to, instead of net, they'll be tied to a league year date, but they'll also be tied to a quote unquote day after a lockout ends or the day after the regular season begins. You know, something like that. They'll do some things with measuring dates just to make sure everything is protected in there. Okay, here's a big thread. So let's see. Casey Chiefs Junkie, we'll start here. What value does Justin Houston have on the trade market? Teams like Tennessee, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Indy should have interest, I would think. I don't think there's going to be much value there. Houston is still somewhat productive, but at his salary, it's just too high. What's Houston's cash salary this year? Let's see. I don't have this one in front of me, so let's look him up. But I think it's too high for a trade. So I think the Chiefs would have to eat some money to make that deal happen. So Houston's deal this year pays him $15.5 million. I don't think he's a $15.5 million player. I think they would have to probably eat anywhere from $3 to $5 million of that cost to be able to get a trade to come through. The next year he's set to make 17.5, so teams are definitely going to look at that as a negative. So I don't think there would be a big trade market for him. Wes, does Trey Flowers hit the open market or do the Patriots franchise tag him? We've been over that one. I think he'll hit the open market, but with a bit of an agreement to pass any offer back to the Patriots and see what they can do. All right, so I think that is everything. Yep, that is all the questions. So hopefully you guys like this tonight. Next week, we'll be back with another podcast. I'm not exactly sure on the topic, so maybe we'll put that out to a little bit of a vote on Twitter or on the website or something. You know, we'll see. Maybe we'll do cornerbacks or linebacker or maybe safety. You know, safety, maybe we'll just do secondary. Safety is probably a good position in free agency this year. You know, like normally I would have said, well, I'll do offensive line this week. But the reason I balked on offensive line is it's not a good year for free agency offensive linemen. You know, your top two guys are probably Donovan Smith and Trent Brown. Does that excite you? No, not really. You know, there's not those guards that are even going to be available this year that are probably, you know, big money players. So, you know, it was just limited in that category. I thought defensive ends and your rush linebackers was a good one just because it's such a strong position in free agency. And safety is probably going to be similar to that. So maybe we'll do safety next week, but I'll probably put that out there. We could do some other topics too, if that's you guys are interested in. So anyway, thanks to everyone for listening. You know, I was able to make it through this despite the basketball playing tonight. Luckily, Voodoo Ranger IPA has helped me out a little bit, staying awake here. So anyway, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you all next week.